Hello, lovelies. Welcome to Horror 421, the podcast, with your host, your friendly small-town horror author, Charles Campbell. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the frights in this week's episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Horror 421, the podcast. I'm your host, small town horror author, Charles Campbell. And today I have a very special guest. He's a friend of mine that I met a few years back at Days of the Dead in Atlanta. And he is an avid horror fan and an all around cool guy. He is a co-host of another podcast called Kill the Cast. And they discuss all kinds of horror stuff. It's really cool. So go check it out. But anyway, welcome to the show, Kenneth Greenwood. I appreciate you being here.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm glad to be here. Been a long time coming.
Yeah. Oh, I was hoping I got your first name right. It was Kenneth. I see you on Facebook as KB.
Yeah, you got it right, man.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Like I said, I met Kenneth, I think it was 2018 at Days of the Dead in Atlanta, and he came to my table, and he checked out my books. He bought a couple of them, and ever since then, I've seen him every year at the convention, and, you know, he's, like I said, he's a real cool cat, and I just wanted to have him on the show, and we can, you know, shoot the shit about horror for a little while. So, Kevin, why don't you fill my listening audience in on your background, how you came up in horror, and, you know, some of your influences to lead you down the path.
Well, first, on this time around, you called me Kevin.
Kenneth.
All right. Yeah, because I know you, KB is fine if that one's easier to remember.
KB, that's what I'll do KB.
Yeah, because that's what you met me as, and that's what you've always known me as.
That's right.
That's cool. No, I came by horror pretty honestly. Like, when I was a kid, I my parents were into it a little bit. My parents like watching movies, and my mom's told me stories about, you know, I was in the theater in her womb. You know what I mean? For horror movies. But the first horror movie that I can remember watching was, you know, the original Night of the Living Dead. I was messing around, and I was underneath my aunt's bed just going through random stuff. And luckily, I didn't find anything crazy. But, you know, being a kid around 4 years old, you know, just being snooping around. And I came across this box of VHS tapes, and I saw this one. And, you know, I just took it out, and it looked like it'd be cool. Said Night of Living Dead on it, popped it in the VCR, and there it was. And, you know, and then other than that, my mom always had, like, Turner Classic Movies on or something like that. So it was always, you know, like Jason Lives or, you know, Part 4, or it was Jaws or something like that. You know, all that stuff was on the TV growing up all the time. And then as I got older, my dad wanted me to get into other things because I was into fantasy movies and watched Disney movies when I was a kid. I mean, I was a huge movie buff, period. And then my dad wanted me to get into, you know, well, if you like this, you need to see this. And, so that was how I got around to watching The Exorcist. I can't remember how old I was, but, Halloween that year, my mom gave me the option. I could either go trick or treating, or I could stay at home with pizza, candy, and horror movies. And that was the first time that I got to watch The Exorcist, because I elected to stay at home.
Oh, hell yeah. I've got an interesting story about The Exorcist. So when I was a kid, I'm 55, so you know, I was here when The Exorcist came out, and it was third grade. I went to Bird Elementary, and it was the network television premiere of The Exorcist on ABC. It was a movie event. Wow. Of course, they're going to cut the hell out of it on ABC. But I was in third grade, and that movie got to so many people that they typed up letters and put it in all the kids' backpacks and sent them home with the kids. And it was like on a Monday night, and they said, "Do not let your child watch this movie tonight."
Nice.
Of course, you know, I snuck around and got little glimpses of it anyway, but yeah, but they cut the hell out of it. But, you know, The Exorcist was one of my, it still is one of my top movies. And that, you know, a lot of horror movies don't really scare me anymore because I'm kind of desensitized to them because I've seen so many of them. But that one, still strikes a nerve in it, and the way they filmed it and the dialogue and just, you know, Linda Blair's talent. I mean, you know, it made you believe, and you watch it, or I watch it, and it's almost more like a documentary than a movie, because that shit looks real.
Right, right. It look, I mean, and I tell people, like, I have, because I'm known to be a horror fan, I'll have other people that aren't as into it as I am, or some of my other buddies are, and they come up and they're always like, what's your favorite horror movie? What's your favorite horror movie? And I'm always like, it's The Exorcist. It always will be.
Right.
And The Exorcist for itself came out in a time period that was perfect, you know, because religion was still a big thing. Catholicism was still a big thing. People hadn't seen anything like that before. I mean, we had stuff, you know, like The Omen and Rosemary's Baby, but you hadn't seen nothing to the level of The Exorcist.
No. Yeah.
And so, you know, when you got a movie like that where people are running out, vomiting, everything, you know, and for the time period that it came out where there's no cell phones, no internet, nothing like that.
Right.
I mean, back in 1973, people weren't even, you know, not a lot of people even had TVs in every single house. You know what I mean? And so, you know, kids now just don't get to experience that kind of thing, you know, where you got people lined up down the theater, you know, standing out there for hours just to catch what showing they can catch. You just don't get that. And, you know, it was a perfect horror movie for the perfect time.
No, you're absolutely right, man. I couldn't agree with you more. And speaking of the time periods, they couldn't, well, technically, if you're an indie horror maker, you can, but, you know, major studios will not make a movie like that. Even, you know, the little Exorcist, whatever they want to call it, Begins, or I watched it. I didn't hate it. I certainly didn't love it. I wouldn't even put it in the same ballpark, not even the same universe.
No.
Not even close. But they're too afraid to make movies like that now. Major studios. Everything's got to be PC. Everything's got to follow a formula, and it drives me crazy. That's why I kind of watch more indie horror than I do. Well, I watch a lot of mainstream horror too, but I enjoy indie horror a little more because they can get away with a little more. You know, I know Terrifier's over the top, but they go all out.
Yeah, I love Terrifier, man.
Yeah, yeah, and I enjoy it. So you talked about your favorite horror movie being The Exorcist. So what's your favorite time period of horror movies? Where do you gravitate and always go back to watch those old films?
The 70s has actually got a really special place in my heart, but for me, not just horror movies, but for movies in general, mm-hmm. I would probably have to say from right around 1982 to 1999.
Okay.
That's where the nostalgia is for me, because, like, you know, I was born in 1983, and so you've got, you know, me growing up as a kid and the things that I was watching and whatever. And then right around the time at the beginning of the millennium, and even then, there are still movies that are good, but, sorry about that. I had a pop up.
Are you good?
But, you know, and there were still movies that were good, but that's where you can start, like right at the beginning of the millennium, you can really start seeing the shift into a lot more digital effects. And yeah. So that, I mean, I say it all the time, each decade of movies has its own complete tone. Like, even when you're watching action movies and stuff like that, if you sit there and you watch a movie from like 1997 versus 2007, you can see a completely different atmosphere, completely different atmosphere. And, you know, so I would have to probably say right there at the beginning of the 80s to 1999, that's probably my favorite looking back on of some of the greatest movies that were ever made. And still, like I said, the 70s has a great place in my heart, but that right there, some of the greatest movies ever, not just horror, were just made during that time.
Well, you're absolutely right, man, because that's kind of in my sweet spot too. It goes back to the 70s a little bit, but through, you know, probably about 1990, like you said, 99-ish. But the action movies, one that popped in my head when you were saying that was Cobra. You know, that's an old Stallone movie, man. You don't see nothing like that anymore. And, no. And as soon as you said action movies, 80s, Cobra popped in my head. And I was like, yeah.
When he, I mean, and even piggybacking on, even piggybacking on Cobra, man. I mean, you just don't see movies coming out anymore like the first two Rambo movies.
Yeah.
You don't see stuff like that, man. You know, I mean, we get good action movies now, but not like that, man. That was those movies were fantastic and they were perfect for their time. You know, and another good one that kind of floats on in the in-between that came out was Predator.
I was about to say that, dude.
Yeah, Predator was fantastic because it was such a great combination of action and horror together, you know, and to be what it was. I mean, because Alien was great, and then when Aliens came out, it was still in that, it was the same kind of cusp of action and horror and sci-fi together, but Predator did it amazing. You know, and then also you got Schwarzenegger in Predator, man. You know, you got Schwarzenegger, you've got
Carl Weathers.
Yeah, that was it. I was just about to say Apollo Creed.
You know? Jesse the Body. Yeah,
man. I mean, you know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it was perfect for when it came out. So it's like that was the heyday. That was when it was amazing, man. And Predator 2 was good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I've interviewed a lot of movie directors and talked to a lot of actors and stuff, but it's just the way they film things. I mean, it's got that, you know, they filmed it. It wasn't digital. It was all on film. And you can tell a difference. And I like the old way. Predator had that look. Cobra had that look. There's a ton of movies in the 80s that just pop into your head where it's not all computer generated and people had to use their talent, did miniatures, you know, like Star Wars, the original Star Wars stuff. And they were meticulous with those miniature models and making sure things were set up. Now people just sit at a computer and, you know, slap something together. And sometimes it looks really good, but sometimes it doesn't look good at all. So yeah, right. I pine for those days. I'm with you.
You can't beat being out there with practical effects on location, man. You just can't beat it. Yep. I mean, you can sit there, like you were saying about Star Wars or whatever, you can sit there and you can, you know, it looks beautiful, but you can tell that it's all green screen, you know? And like I said, I mean, you know, Predator was filmed in Mexico. Rambo 2, I think, was filmed in Mexico, you know, to you know, stand in for the jungle. You can't beat stuff like that, man. It was awesome.
Well, an early 80s movie that's near and dear to my heart, and I love it, and I watch it probably a couple times a year, and we can talk about it a little bit if you want, but it's John Carpenter's The Thing. That movie is head and shoulders above the rest. You know, it's in my top five for sure. The practical effects are there. The acting is there. Kurt Russell, he's a young man in that movie, but he looks like an old grizzled veteran. If you go back and watch, So everything about that film was amazing to me.
That's one of those that still gives me the willies, man, when I watch it, because it's like, you know, when you see the practical effects, like especially when it, you know, when the thing turns into the one where the head's kind of hanging down and it's got the tentacles all sticking out and whatever, I'm just like, ugh! It still gives me the willies to this day, man.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking awesome.
The dogs too. When the dog is kind of changing, you know, right at the beginning, that one does too, man. That just gets at me. I'm just, ugh. It's so good though.
Well, they left it so open at the end where, you know, Kurt and I forget the actor's name. Is it David Keith?
I can't remember. Keith.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there, and he's like, "Well, what are we gonna do? I guess we're just gonna sit here for a while and see what happens."
Let's find out. Nice. Let's see. Is it going to be on here? All it says is Kurt Russell.
Okay. All right.
Well, that's the only one it's got on the back.
Kurt Russell's been in some good stuff, man. All the way from, you know, Escape from New York to Tombstone. I could talk about Tombstone all day as well. Yeah,
Tombstone's one of my favorites, man. That was so good. Tombstone was an amazing movie.
It certainly was. So in your movie background, and you guys talk about it, I've listened to several episodes of Kill the Cast, the podcast, and I don't know if you guys are making new episodes or if you're in production or not, but I've listened to a few, and you guys kick it back and forth on movies. So you talked about what your all-time favorite movie is, but what is your, you know, maybe top three or five films that you go to all the time, minus The Exorcist? We've already established that's your favorite, but what are some of your all-time favorite flicks?
I would probably have to say ones that I always go to. I'd have to think about it because I circle around through so many movies. I'm one of those people that I'm kind of weird. It's what catches me at that moment. Like one day, you know, if I'm scrolling through TikTok or something like that, I'll come through a little clip and I'll be like, okay, well, I want to watch that. Like that happened to me a couple of weeks ago. And I ended up watching the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, the 2010. Just from a little clip on TikTok, I was like, I'm just going to go back and revisit that. It wasn't that great of a movie, but you know.
Yeah.
It has its moments. So I would probably have to say probably Jason Part 7, because that's my favorite in the series. So okay. That's always one that I'll go back to. Man.
I want to segue into that. I want to stop you right there. What makes that one your favorite? Because I have a favorite too, and it's Part 2. And I have a book here that I'm going to read about it. But I want to know why your Part 7 is your favorite. I like Part 7, but I want to hear your take on it. What makes
I'm always defending it because all my buddies are the same. They all think Part 2 is the best one. I think Jason, to me, from a practical look, it's the first time that Kane Hodder played the character. And he just looks so brutal in that makeup, man. Mm-hmm. From, you know, being able to see his spine and his rib cage in the back, having the chain around his neck, being able to see his teeth gritting, you know, the whole thing. And then he just seemed so, I mean, like one of my favorite scenes in that movie is when Jason busts through the window and he's fighting Tina and he busts through the window and he kind of comes through, you know, with his knees up and everything kind of Spider-Man style through the window. Right. And he just hits like the superhero and then just stands up and stares at her with that deep breath. Every single time I watch that movie, man, I'm just like, oh, that's so awesome. You know, he's just so menacing looking, man. I mean, that's probably it. And I like the fact that he has a worthy opponent, you know, because originally it was supposed to be like a Freddy versus Jason kind of deal. And they gave him a worthy opponent.
Right. Someone who could. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We had a little bit of technical difficulty there, but we're going to pick up on our conversation. We're talking about Friday 13th, Part 7. And KB was telling us about, you know, his favorite part of the movie, and I was talking about how Tina was a superhero. So let's keep going.
Right. So, like I said, it's like having a worthy opponent that he can go up against, you know? And then having, to me, one of the best Jasons that was in the series, you know, with the physicality that Kane Hodder had, bringing that together with her and the practical effects, like the roof falling down on top of him, going through the stairs, getting set on fire, you know, all these different things, man. Another one of my favorite scenes is when the girl goes swimming in the lake. And right before that, her boyfriend gets cut right straight up through the face, you know, with the axe. And Jason's just under the water and she's freaking out and whatever. And he just grabs her by her leg and pulls her down and she drowns. I mean, all of that. I just think the whole movie was great. You know, it had some really good kills in it. Jason looked amazing. And then you get to see his whole face when his mask busts off, you know, so the whole thing. I mean, that's just one of my favorites. It is my favorite. That's probably always going to be a go-to. Nightmare on Elm Street 4 would probably be a go-to, even though I don't think that's the best one. My favorite is Part 2.
Okay.
But Part 4 was like, you know, it's like watching a car. To me, it's like the beginning of the Looney Tunes era of that. Part 3 kind of starts in it. And so it's just fun. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's one of those that I can just watch.
I'm a Dream Warriors guy. I like that one.
Part 2 is my favorite, man. And it's another reason why it's my favorite is because of the way he looks. He just looks so wicked in Part 2.
Like, well, Part 1 is great, but if you look at it, Freddy doesn't have a lot of screen time in Part 1 at all.
Right. He doesn't. You know, which I think, I mean, it's good, you know. Bruce didn't have a whole lot of screen time in Jaws either. Right. You know what I mean? But, you know, like when you see Freddy in Part 2, when he's at the pool, see him turn around and he looks at the guy trying to talk to him and the flames are just lighting up his face, he just looks so wicked, man. And that's the reason why that one's my favorite. The story is kind of, it's all right, but that one's my favorite for the way he looks, man.
Now, that one, did that one start off with the school bus at the beginning?
Yep.
Yeah. I just make sure I got them in order, because I always liked the Dream Warriors because Heather came back.
Right.
And she kind of led the little superhero kids. I call them superhero kids, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, part two, what? I have to go back and revisit part two. It's been a long time since I watched that one. I've seen the first one and the third one very recently. But part two kind of gets lost in my brain a little bit. I remember I had the school bus, and he was kind of, wasn't he kind of trying to come back through that kid?
Yep. Okay. That was exactly it. Yep, it's the one where, you know, his claws come out of the kid's fingers, and then he slits his chest open and kind of comes out of his chest.
Yeah.
So that one was really good. And I actually watched it right before I went to Comic-Con in February, because I got Robert Englund's autograph at Comic-Con.
Oh, sweet. Sweet.
Yeah, I got it on a Freddy glove.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah.
So, but those are probably go-tos, man, when it comes to horror movies. Like I said, it's kind of hard because it just really just whatever hits me at the moment. Because I've seen so many. It's just whatever hits me at that time period. You know, and then the bad part about it is if I start a series at the beginning, usually I'll go through the whole thing. So if I get a hankering to like watch Friday the 13th, the first one,
I'll watch them all.
By the time I'm done, I've watched them all. The same thing with Nightmare on Elm Street. Hellraiser 2 is one that I go to a lot. I really like that one. I still got, you know, a special place in my heart for the first one. Yeah. But the second one's really good. I really like seeing Hell and the Leviathan, you know, the Labyrinth and all that. I really like that. But yeah, that's a good one. Maximum Overdrive. That's a guilty pleasure. Love that movie.
That's not a guilty pleasure. That's awesome, man. That's some Stephen King stuff, you know. And I like the Green Goblin on the front of that truck.
Yeah, man, it looks great. The First Warlock. That's another one. The Langoliers. Love the Langoliers. Oh, yeah. You know, I love TV movies. Like another Stephen King movie that I watched that I revisited was Dolores Claiborne. I watched that yesterday.
That was an awesome movie, but the book, man, I don't know if you read the book, but the book was even better.
I haven't got around to the book yet. I've read so many of his books, but that's one that I haven't yet.
I've got it on the shelf over here. Of course, a lot of my Stephen King collection is missing. Somebody's lifted some of my stuff, but that's all right. I was a Stephen King kid growing up for sure. And loved all his early work. Christine, Carrie, Firestarter, all that stuff that he wrote way back then, man. It was just special. And it kind of sent me on my little journey.
I think the last one of his books that I finished was The Gunslinger. I think that was the last one that I finished because I wanted to start the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
And so I read The Gunslinger. And then I was going to start the second one, and for whatever reason, I didn't end up starting it. So I think, that was the last one.
That's a shit ton left to read, dude. That's a long series.
Yeah.
And then other books, he ties it in sometimes, you know, with a book here, he'll refer to The Dark Tower. So it's kind of a spinoff, but not really because the stories are self-contained. But I kind of felt like the book Fairy Tale that came out last year, the year before, he was going there, but he didn't. He told a completely different story, which I was okay with because sometimes his shit's hard to keep up with.
Right. That was the main reason why I wanted to start the Dark Tower series is because the way people make out that series is that it all kinds of links together. It links like all of his other stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, there's in a sense.
Easter eggs here and there. Yeah.
Right. Because when I didn't know this. I had read Cujo first, and I didn't realize where some of the characters were coming from. And then I went back and I read The Dead Zone, and then there were references to Pennywise in there.
Yep.
And it just kind of back and forth. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting this. And then I watched that series, Castle Rock.
Yeah.
You know,
I've seen that.
And then, you know, when you get into the second season, that's got Annie Wilkes in it.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm like, what's going on here, man? It's like all just kind of turning into this ball of the Stephen King universe. And I'm like, this is really cool. And so I was really on a huge kick with that for a while.
Yeah, his stuff is all, you know, for the most part, interconnected. The last couple of books I've read that were straight novels, I kind of suffered through him, and I don't want to make this a political podcast, but he puts his political spins in there, and it takes me out of the story. The story's really good, but then you slam me over the head with, you know, your point of view on politics, and I'm like, come on, man. I may agree with you. I may not agree with you, but I don't want it in my Stephen King book. I just want to read your story.
Well, honestly, man, I think, you know, when it comes to it, and to not get into our own personal affiliations, I think that one of the biggest problems we're having nowadays with entertainment in general is people trying to shoehorn their agenda yep. into everything, no matter which direction yep. you're going. It's like, you know, I was listening to this this video on YouTube, and I say listening because I, you know, turned the screen off and was just listening to it. And it was about this thing called something Big Baby Inc. or something like that, where they're doing it in video games now. And the thing about it is it's like, I watch these movies and I read these books and I play video games to get away from that crap. You know, I don't want that. You know what I mean? It's like, this is my escape. Don't take it away from me. I'm not a drug addict. You know what I mean? I'm not sitting out somewhere, you know, shooting up heroin or something. I want to watch exactly. horror movies to escape. So it's like, when I see that crap in there, I mean, there's a time and a place for it. You know, like if it's an indie movie where that's the main focus or something right, like that, you right. know, I get it. You know, and certain ones that I watch, you know, I'll watch it for that.
Right.
But otherwise, you know, it's like, no. I don't need to know what side of the spectrum that Freddy Krueger leans on. You know what I'm
right,
saying?
Right, I don't right. care. No, exactly what you're saying, because I was reading last summer. We were at the beach, and I got Holly, and Stephen King wrote a wonderful series, the Mr. Mercedes trilogy, and they were amazing books. They were all good. They were more detective novels than they were horror novels, to be honest with you, and had a character in there called, her name was Holly. I forget what her last name is. And she'd been in a couple of other books. She was in The Outsider, and he had her in something else. And so he released a book with centered around her, and I'm like, oh, shit, I really want to read this. Got it last summer, sat out on the beach, started reading it, got 5 pages in, hits me over the head. 10 pages in, hits me over the head. 20 pages in, hits me over the head again. 30 pages in, hits me over the head again. At 40 pages in, I shut the book. I put the bookmark in it and shut it, and it's still sitting on my shelf. You keep taking me out of the story, man. Your story's good, but you keep taking me out of it. I don't care.
Yeah. And I've got certain books that, not even politically, but I've got certain books that I, you know, certain authors that I absolutely love. Like, I'm a huge Anne Rice fan. I love Anne Rice's novels. But when I read The Vampire Armand, you know, which is part of the Vampire Chronicles, when I read mm-hmm. that one, I was just like, I kind of was the same way as you. I mean, I pushed through it. You know, but there's only so much, you know, sexual things that I can take. I mean, it's like, if I wanted to read a romance novel, I would read a romance novel.
Right.
Because don't get me wrong, you know, the earlier books in the series definitely have those things in there. You know, like the romanticism between Louis and Lestat and so on and so forth. You know, it's all there. But Armand was just straight up. I mean, it's like, I can't remember whether she wrote that around the same time that she did her romance novels, but man, I was just like, oh my God. I mean, I just had to push through it to get through it. But at the end of the day, you know, people are going to write what they want to write, but you know, there's just certain things where I'm like, come on, man, come on, let's just keep this going the way we all thought it was going to go. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh man. Now, I heard you in your Kill the Cast podcast, and you mentioned it here just a couple minutes ago, and I'm not an avid video game player, but I do play video games. I do have a PlayStation 5 my wife got me for Christmas. I had a PS4 before, and I heard you talking about Resident Evil 2 and the Resident Evil games and Silent Hill. So tell me a little bit about your background playing those games, and you know what you find enjoyable about them. I'm a humongous Resident Evil 4 fan. Played it on the GameCube, played it on the Wii, played it on the PS5, played it on the PS4, played it on every platform I could play it on. Love that game. But yeah, chat with me a couple minutes about your video game passion in the horror genre.
Well, I mean, it just kind of spilled over. You know what I mean? And once I can remember when I got the first Resident Evil game that I ever played was Part 2. And it was back during PS1, you know, mm-hmm. and a friend of mine had loaned it to me, and I played through that, you know, and it was really good. I did both discs, you know what I mean, or both sets of discs. I can't remember whether it was one or two, but I did Leon's and Claire's. I did both of them, and I really, really enjoyed it. And I was talking to a buddy of mine at school about it, and he said, why don't you check out this game? And he gave me Silent Hill, the first one. Mm-hmm. And, man, I loved it. It was so cool, and it was so dark, and it was unlike anything I'd ever seen before, you know, because I grew up in Nintendo days, and, you know, the majority of that's platforming games. You got a couple of horror games, you know, spilled in there, but nothing like what we were getting in the 3D era. Right. And I loved Silent Hill. And then I just kind of followed with Resident Evil, you know, because Resident Evil 2 was awesome. Resident Evil 3 was okay. And then Resident Evil 4 came out. And at some point I went back and played the first one. Yeah. But, and then when Resident Evil 4 came out, the format of it was completely different. And so I really got into that.
Yeah, you know? It was over the shoulder, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I just kept going with it. And then I started branching out, trying to find any kind of, you know, different horror themed games that I could. And then you start, you know, seeing the ones that come out where it's like zombie oriented, you know what I'm saying? Like Dying Light or Left 4 Dead or any of those, you know, you've got the gore games that are starting to come out. And then now we're at a point where, you know, we're getting cinematic.
Cinematic. I was going to say they're like cinematic games coming out.
The Dark Until Anthology Dawn. Series. That was the same company that did the Dark Anthology series did Until Dawn. And that's like playing a slasher movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was fantastic. And I just kind of followed with it because, you know, playing video games is more visceral. You know what I mean? You're involved in it. Your decisions is what's going through this, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm also a big Alien fan. So when Alien Isolation came out, you know, that was a fantastic game. That was, I'd have to say, it's the best Alien game I've ever played, you know, and it was nice for finally somebody to do something right.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, going through all those, I mean, I just kept going with it, man. Any kind of horror game that I can find, I will try to get into it at some point in time. Like right now I'm in the middle of Alan Wake 2.
Okay.
And the first one was really good.
I started playing The Quarry a couple months back, but I haven't gotten very far in it. It's one of those cinematic type games where you make decisions.
And
it's a slasher. You got a bunch of kids in a cabin. And
When I got my PS5, that was actually the first one that I got. The first PS5 game that I got was The Quarry.
Oh, did you play through it? I haven't
played it yet.
Okay, yeah, I beat it. Cool.
It's good stuff. You know, you're playing a werewolf movie.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's good, you know, but it's the same thing with the Dark Pictures, you know, the Dark Pictures anthology. It's set up the exact same way as those, you know, where you're playing basically through movies and, you know, Man of Medan, which is the first one, you're on a boat, or Man of Medan. I can't remember how it's pronounced. The second one, Little Hope. Yeah, the second one, Little Hope, that one is probably to me one of the best ones. It's got a very, very interesting story to it. You're in the woods in this town and you're trying to figure out, you know, where people have been and stuff like that. It's really cool. And then House of Ashes is the one right after that. And I can't remember the fourth one. It's got something to do with the devil. I can't remember what that one is because I don't have it yet. But yeah, man, I mean, that's just what it comes down to. Just anything that I can find to immerse myself in horror. Because I don't know what it is about it. Like I said, it may be just the visceral thing of it.
Right.
But it's always been my go-to, man. Like the creepier and the more atmospheric that something can get, that's the way I like my movies. Like that's the reason why I like Silent Hill so much. That's my favorite horror franchise of all time, especially the first three games. Because it has such an atmosphere to it where you're in this town. The town looks like it's almost deserted except for monsters and random people.
Right.
You know, and it's a very slow moving game. It's not fast like Resident Evil is. And you're having to figure out these puzzles and, you know, it's foggy and you've got, you know, depending on, you know, however you want to look at it, either snow or ash or whatever it is that's fallen down, and you're having to utilize your map and all the rest of this. It's the atmosphere of it is what really gets me. Like every time, you know, I live here in Georgia, and every time that, you know, the rain comes and it's humid outside, and and you can see the fog,
see the steam,
and,
yeah,
and all the rest of that. You know, me and my old lady were always just like, it's like Silent Hill outside. Let's go hang out outside.
Well, the Silent Hill games, I did play through the first one, and I remember the atmosphere of it. Now, this was years ago. I'm not a super avid video game player, but I do enjoy them, and I do play them occasionally, maybe a little more than occasionally, but not nearly as much as a full bore gamer fan. But I did play Silent Hill back in the day, and I remember it was in the living room of our old house, and I had the lights out, and I'm just sitting there like, you know, just a couple feet away from the television, and the freaking sounds would make me jump and scare the shit out of me when I'm playing that game. Right. Man.
Right. I mean, it's really cool, man. And like I said, like the second one has got such a psychological undertone to it where you're trying to figure it out, because it's the entirety of what's going on with James in the second one is things that are brought about, what's going on in his mind and his guilt based on, you know, his relationship with his wife that was dying. And, oh. And so to see, you know, that kind of thing put into a game, and all the characters and the way Silent Hill looks and all the rest of that meshed together, completely based around this guy's psychological outlook on it, it is phenomenal to me. It's one of the best video game stories that's ever been put out. You know, and there's other really great games like The Last of Us and stuff like that.
Oh, I played the shit out of those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're still really good games, but you know, there's just something about that, man, where it takes you in a different plane of video gaming when you get through it like that.
Well, I've just recently finished replaying The Last of Us 2 Remastered. I got it when it was on the PS4, and I told my wife I'm going to be in my room for, you know, the next week, just so don't bother me.
Right.
I'm obsessed over that game. And then when they released the remastered version, you know, if you already had the PS4 version, you popped down $10 and got that one. So I just recently replayed through all of it again, and it brought back all those same. Of course, I was better at it because of the experience I had playing it on the PS4. But yeah, it brought back all of those cool feelings of, you know, playing as Abby. A lot of people gave it shit, you know, because you broke it up like that between Ellie and Abby. But I actually liked Abby's story. I don't know where you fall on that, but I thought it was a cool twist.
I mean, man, you know, there's certain games that I don't really like jumping back and forth between characters, but I like doing that because it's almost like in that game, it was almost like, especially after the TV show came out, it's going back and playing it after the TV show come out. It's almost like, you know, getting the full effect of everything right. that's going on, you know, so that way you can see what's going on over here and you can see what's going on over here at the same right. time while this is going on and so on. So it just really depends. Like, this isn't a horror game, but when I got into that, I got into Ninja Gaiden when they put that out again on PS3, and I didn't like jumping between characters. You know, that was one of those games that I didn't like it. But in horror games and stuff like that, I don't mind it at all because you, like I said, you get a more well-rounded view of what's going on in the world.
Yeah. Well, for Last of Us 2, particularly for me, when I first played on the PS4, I hated it because when, you know, we were getting good with Ellie, and then Abby shows up, and then, you know, you think there's going to be a confrontation right there, and then it flips, and then you basically play the entire game again as Abby, but you're coming at it from her point of view, and then you're understanding, okay, this is why she did what she did. This is why she was on this mission to kill Joel and had to kill him. And so
exactly.
From a storytelling perspective, after I thought about it, I'm like, this is okay. I get it. And then when I played it again, I actually looked forward to switching over to her character versus the first time I played it. I was like, as soon as it happened, I was like, what is this bullshit when I'm playing it? You know,
right.
Like, what the hell?
But that's exactly why I like it. Cause you get that whole well-rounded idea of what's going on in this whole scenario. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep. And that's kind of like the same thing with the Dark Pictures Anthology. When you're playing Little Hope, you end up going through every one of the characters in that game. And there's six of them. and you end up playing each individual character, and you've got to make choices of what's going on. And then it'll go from their scenario, which, you know, it'll jump back and forth between them. So you'll be playing one character for 15 minutes, and you'll be playing another character for 35 minutes, and then you'll be playing another character. And when you jump to the next character, it literally picks up at the cliffhanger where the next one, where the one just happened.
Okay.
So you can, like, let's say, you know, your character dies for whatever reason. When you go to the next character, you can hear the screams of the one that you just died from.
Oh man, that's crazy. Yeah,
it's really good, man. It's really good.
I might have to check that out. Another gem that I played through the first one, and I haven't played the sequel, was, I think it was called The Evil Within.
I played the first one.
Yeah, I haven't played the second one, but that was kind of trippy and psychedelic too, man. That one had that
Resident Evil feel to it, but
that's what I was about to say. Yeah, it was kind of a Resident Evil-ish kind of feel to it, but I enjoyed it. I may have to replay it before I play the sequel. I have both games, but I've only played.
Yeah, I've got them both too, and I just hadn't gotten around to the second one because Alan Wake 2 came out right after I finished The Evil Within, and I had been waiting on Alan Wake 2. Man, when you get to the end of The Evil Within, man, it's just wild. Like,
it's when you're looking at crazy.
When you're looking at the cityscapes, when it's all kind of crushing down, and like the first time when you go into, I can't remember the main character's name now.
I can't off the top of my head, but I know who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? When you first wake up in like the mental asylum where you can go and upgrade your gear and everything. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was like, what is this? Yeah. And then, you know, you go talk to the receptionist slash nurse lady that's up there.
Right.
And then how everything just breaks down the further you get through the game. Yep. It was wild to watch, man. But I really enjoyed it.
Well, man, we had a great discussion on video games. So I'm going to change the subject a little bit from where I met you. I met you at the Days of the Dead convention, and it was in 2018. You purchased one or two of my books. I can't remember which one it was. Might have been Behind the Creaking Door. I can't remember. That was it. But tell me about your love for reading horror. You know, you kind of told me a little bit already about who you gravitate towards when you read horror books. But, you know, who are some of your favorite horror authors? And, you know, are you reading anything now?
I would have to say favorite horror authors, obviously, you know, Stephen King's always going to be a staple for most of us horror fans. There are very few of us that don't like him. Anne Rice, Dean Koontz, John Saul, Clive Barker. He's at the top.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the ones that I can think of off the top of my head. And, the main reason why I got into reading horror is because I wanted more depth, pretty much. You know, like growing up watching movies and then finding out that they're based on books and then realizing that a lot of times there's so much that's left out of these stories and things that are absolutely completely changed between the source material and the movies, you know, and sometimes it's for the worst. And so that was the reason why I really wanted to get into that. And I even started for a while there, I was searching out, I was searching out book adaptations of movies that were, you know, books beforehand. And I started doing that. Like we'll go back to Rambo, the first Rambo movie, First Blood, that was based off of a book beforehand. But the rest, the subsequent movies were, they made movie adaptations of it, and even that has a whole lot of differences. And so I really got into this thing where I wanted to know a lot more about what was going on with these characters. And one of the biggest ones that got me was reading It, because there is so much stuff going on in that book.
They can't make that movie.
And that's the crazy thing about it, because I mean, when I, you know, even the audiobook, because I've read the book and then I listened to the audiobook, and I've listened to the audiobook three times, and the audiobook's 46 hours long.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I've listened to it three times.
Holy crap.
And there's so much stuff that's going on that they just cannot. I mean, you would literally, to be able to get everything in there, and if you have the ability to do so, because there's so much stuff that probably doesn't need to be on screen.
Well, I was going to say, there's some things they can't legally put in there.
Right. You know what I mean? But you would have to turn that into a series, because to be able to get, you know, everything that you could put on.
And you probably get four seasons out of it.
Right. Cause it's so vast, and it started there. And then I just went even further. You know what I mean? Like, that was how I got into Anne Rice, besides my dad being a huge fan of her. He was the one that told me that I should read Interview with the Vampire after the one with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, which I still think is a great adaptation of the first book.
I love that movie, but, and you had a very young Kirsten Dunst in there.
Yeah. I thought it was a really good adaptation for what they did with it. I actually really enjoy the new show also. But, you know, and so it went with stuff like that. And then Dad convinced me to read, Interview the Vampire. And then, you know, I went from that and through the rest of the Vampire Chronicles. And anytime I can find anything like that, like, you know, I'm a huge fan of the Langoliers, like I said earlier. So mm-hmm. I went and I hunt down the short story for it. You know what I mean? And that was just where it went. And then I got into other things and just went from there.
Well, I have a funny story about Interview with the Vampire. And my brother and I, my youngest brother, he's 8 years younger than me. When that movie came out, we went to see something else. It was at Regal Cinema or Regency Mall Cinemas. This was a long time ago, whenever that movie came out. I can't remember what year it was. But I forgot what we went to see, but it wasn't that. And we get there and we buy our tickets and we go in there and we're about to step up to the ticket line. And the guy behind the counter says, he says, "Are you here for Interview with the Vampire?" And my brother goes, "Nah, man, we're here to see a movie." And I was like, "Dude, that is a movie."
Nice.
I was like, "Whatever." But anyway, I digress. That was my little funny story from that. But that stuck out in my brain. We should have seen that movie, because I can't remember what movie we saw. Must have been shitty. But yeah. But that was a great film, man. And it was a great adaptation for sure. One of the things that sticks out in my head about adaptations of movies and Stephen King, and you probably already know this, but The Shining has come. It is completely different.
Yeah, 100%. And I've seen both versions of the movies, and then also read the book. And obviously the version with, and I can't even remember this actor's name, but he was in Wings. He was in that show Wings.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah, I can see his face. Yeah, I know you're talking about.
Right, because he's the one that played Jack in the
miniseries,
the lighter version. Yeah, of The Shining, and it was a lot different, and which, you know, that version was closer than the Stanley Kubrick, but you know, that's one of those where I think that's another one that I think it would be difficult, and probably it would have to be longer than, you know, 2.5 hours or 4 hours or whatever it is. It would have to be one of those that, you know, you'd have to break it up, I honestly think, in probably four parts to do a proper miniseries to get the whole thing.
Right.
But there's just, again, that's another one of those where there's so much stuff going on and things that they had to leave out, you know, especially with Danny and whatnot. But the Dr. Sleep, I thought that the adaptation that, what's his name? He did the show on Netflix too. I can't remember his name. He did The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Anyhow, I can't remember his name, but he's like real big now and he's getting there in the horror stuff.
Are you talking about the director?
Yeah.
It was Mike Flanagan.
Mike Flanagan, that's it. Yep. Yeah, because he loves doing adaptations of Stephen King stuff. The mesh that he did for the movie between the book and the Stanley Kubrick movie, I thought was fantastic. I thought he did such a good job of putting those two together, because the book was awesome.
The book's amazing. I've read it three times.
Yeah, it was so good.
And as good as the book was, I loved the movie almost as much. And the actress that plays Rose the Hat, she fucking nailed it.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name off the top of my head. But
I can't either. But she did a great job.
Great job.
And so, like I said, the amalgamation of being able to make a sequel to not only a movie, but a movie adaptation to a book sequel and put them both together to where they fit perfectly, it was beautiful. He did such a great job. And, you know, so I think a lot of people, when they go to make these movies, like the 1990 version of It, I think had a better feel for the source material than the newer one.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know what I mean? It still didn't have everything that it should have had in it. And the things that needed to be left out should have been. But yeah. I'll always have a special place in my heart for that because, you know, Tim Curry scared the shit out of me when I was a kid.
No, I love Tim Curry, man. He's one of my heroes.
He scared me so bad in that movie when I was a kid. I
never Rocky wanted to Horror, man. And he played Darkness in Legend. I don't know if you saw that one, but I did. Dude, the man,
he did such a good job.
Yeah, he is a legend. That was the right title for that movie. And it, you know, it wasn't a big box office hit and a lot of people don't like it, but I love it. I think it's a great little fantasy flick.
Right. But I mean, most of the stuff that I got into, man, is just searching stuff out. You know, when it comes to books, I just search things out, you know, and see what's cool and what's not. Same reason why, like, I walked up to your table. It's like, you know, you write horror books, I'm going to check it out. you know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate you walking up because got to become friends with you, even though I called you Kevin. So
it's all good.
It's Kenneth, KB.
I've got a lot of people that know me as KB, man. At the gas station that's right beside my house that I frequent, they know me as KB because the first time they ever saw me was on Facebook. And so now that's what they call me. KB. So, you know, I'm pretty used to that.
It's all right, man. It's all good. It's all love. I kind of connected with you the first time I saw you. I thought you were a cool guy, and then I'd see you every year, and you'd come by the table, and, you know, saw you this year. You picked up another couple books for a young lady. I think she's your relative. I don't.
She's my niece by marriage.
Your niece. Yeah, yep.
Yeah. And then I also got, as a matter of fact, I got it sitting right here.
Oh, nice. The Piano Witch. Nice little plug. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, man. I picked that up for her, and then I got that one for me. And are you gonna be there in October?
Oh, they're gonna be there in October?
Yeah, have you not seen it yet?
I need to go take a look. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Well, that's early.
Cool. Yeah, I was surprised.
I still have it in February too.
I don't know. I went on the website to see if they have the new dates for next year. For 2025, and they had it up for October, and I was like, wow.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna, wow. Yeah, October 4th through 6th, what the hell?
Isn't that crazy?
Well, I'm a vendor, man. They should be sending me an email or something.
Twice in the same year.
That's cool. So the convention scene, before we get off the air, I want to talk about that a little bit. I know you go to Days of the Dead in Atlanta. I see you there every year. And I heard you mention Comic-Con. What do you like about the horror conventions and the comic conventions? And, where all do you go when you go to these conventions?
Honestly, it's kind of surreal seeing the actors and the creators of these things that I grew up with, you know, in person. Like, even if you don't walk up and talk to them, just walking by their tables and seeing them is an extremely surreal experience. You know, like when I went to Comic-Con and I saw Robert Englund, I stood in line for 2 hours, and where I was standing, they had it set up to where, you know, a lot of times in a small space, they have a line to where you kind of work your way around, you know what I'm saying? Instead of being in like a circle, it's like, you go up and then turn and go down and up and down.
Yeah.
And so the spot where I was at, I was watching him. I was probably like 3 or 4 feet away from him, watching him talk to everybody else and just have conversations and whatever for probably a good hour.
Wow.
You know? Yeah. I was like right there. And like I said, it's just a real experience because you grow up and you see these people, you know, larger than life on the silver screen, and to be right next to them, you know, regardless of whether when you get to the table, they turn out to be the greatest person in the world, or they turn out to be an asshole. You know, it's like I said, it's kind of mind blowing to do that, you know. And the same thing with going to Days of the Dead. You know, the first time I walked up to, you know, Clive Barker's table when I got to meet him, you know, and he was super nice. And walking up to his table and being like, you know, I've been watching your creation since I was a child, you know. Doug Bradley, the same thing. When I walked up to him, it's like, you know, seeing this guy, and you know, I'd have to move my computer, but I've got a Hellraiser poster sitting right behind me that's an original from when the movie came out. You know, to walk up and see this guy,
yeah,
that terrified me as a kid and then became one of the, you know, icons and everything that I know in person, man. It's anybody out there that's listening, if you ever get a chance to do it, go do it, because it's just an extremely surreal experience. It's interesting, and if you let yourself get into it, like I said, don't have any expectations about the person, because I have met some actors that were just didn't like, you know, and you're going to come across that because they're people, you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, it just standing there and looking at them while they're doing everything else that they're doing, it's interesting, you know what I'm saying? Especially if you take the time to take it in, because going for the years that I've been, I've met so many different actors and different creators of things, you know, you know, I've met Tyler Mane, and I've met, you know, Bill Moseley's usually there every year, you know.
Yeah,
I've met
him. He's usually a regular. Yep.
Yeah. I've talked to him a few times, you know, talking to, you know, Kim Coates, the guy that played Tigger on Sons of Anarchy. That was interesting. You know, Violent J, dude that played Art the Clown.
David Howard Thornton, we had him on the podcast 2 years ago.
Yeah he was on ours too, you know. Seeing him, Malcolm McDowell, you know all these different, I mean, you know, like growing up watching A Clockwork Orange, you know what I mean, and
exactly.
Then seeing him in person, it's wild.
Well, one guy I'm glad I did get to see for a couple of years that I went there before he passed was Sid. You know, you could see Sid walking around. He's, you know, he sometimes in makeup, sometimes out of, but he was walking around, and, you know, you could walk up and talk to him, and he was a pretty cool dude. And
was real nice, man.
Real nice. And then, you know, 1 year you look over and he's not there anymore. So, yeah it was cool to be able to actually see that guy. It really was. But I'm a Sid fan.
Yeah. The first year that they had Days of the Dead, it was in a city that was closer to where I live. It wasn't in downtown Atlanta. Yeah. And it was the very first year, and Bill and Sid were both there, and it was packed full of people because the hotel was a little smaller.
Right.
And my daughter was probably one, not even. And we were pushing her in there in a stroller. So my daughter's been around horror stuff since she was a baby.
Right.
And, we wanted to do that on purpose, so that way if we ever took her to the cons, she wouldn't freak out when she saw people in, you know, dressed up in makeup and stuff like that. Yeah. You know? And so she was there, and there were people pushing and whatever, and you could see Sid and Bill trying to make their way through to get to their table, and they accidentally bumped into the stroller. And Sid turns around and he's just like, "I am so sorry." And he was super sweet, and he went down and he leaned and he touched Jade on her, you know, he kind of coo-choo-choo-choo on that, you know, and he's right. Being Sid. So, you know what I'm saying? And that was a really cool experience, man, because that was the first time I'd ever had like a direct interaction with him versus being at the table. You know, that was really cool. And he was super nice, man. And, you know, I hate that he's gone. And that'll be one of those things that I kind of always remember, is how cool he was with me and my little baby at the time, you know, my daughter's. Yeah, my daughter's about to be 13 now. You know what I mean?
Yep. I do. I've got one that's 28.
Wow. Well, I waited until later. I didn't have my daughter until I was 27. So, you know, I waited until a little bit later.
I did too. I'm old, man. I'm 55. We had her when I was 26, so I wasn't far off.
I didn't think you were that far ahead of me, man.
Oh yeah, I'm an old man, dude. I'm screaming at kids to get off my lawn, you know.
Nice. Yeah, I'll be 41 this year.
Oh yeah, yeah. But for sure. And speaking of people, you know, that you just noticed, and I think that is pretty fucking cool that you got to watch Robert Englund just interact with people. That's something you'll keep in your head, because I think that was probably worth the wait in line to watch him interact and talk to people, I would think.
Yeah, man. It really was. And every once in a while, you know, being that close to him, every once in a while, you know, like, because naturally when you're doing a when you're having a conversation with somebody and there's a bunch of people around, your eyes shift and stuff like that. And there was quite a few times in the conversation, man, that he would look over at me like I was part of the conversation and he was talking to me too, you nice. Know, and I'm just standing there in line, you know what I mean? So that was really cool, man. I would have to say that's probably the surreal experience is probably the best thing about cons. And then the other part of it, man, is the vendors. Because you see stuff there that you don't see anywhere else.
Oh, you know what I mean? Anywhere else. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You know, like this past year at Days of the Dead, and I'm pretty sure you saw it. I actually joined his Facebook page, but there was a guy that had, it was like, she was like, I would have to say 4.5 feet tall, and it was the lady pinhead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I did.
You figure, yeah. You know, where the guy was in the back corner.
Yep.
And he had all those other different dioramas and things like that. I hadn't seen any of that stuff any stuff to that level at the con yet. And that was fantastic. Like I said, I follow him on Facebook. He had some really cool stuff. And then some of the other comic book artists, man. And like guys like you, you know, that I see every year, you know, there's just certain things that you just can't get anywhere else. You know,
well, speaking of authors, I'm going to have him on a show, upcoming show. I got this at Days of the Dead in Atlanta, and it's an author named Robbie Dorman, and it's called Underneath. And if you're a fan of The Thing, you should pick this up. And he even kind of at the end of the book, it's called Underneath, and it's set in Antarctica, and it's nice. Really, really good. Really, really good. So in his acknowledgments, his last line in the acknowledgments, and thank you to John Carpenter for The Thing. It has that feel. It has that vibe. It's not like a retelling of The Thing, and it's not a copy of The Thing, but it has that tone. And his story's original. Robbie Dorman, he's going to be on an upcoming episode. This book is called Underneath. It came out in 2019, and it is freaking amazing. I just finished it yesterday, and I let him know.
When we get done recording, man, you know, shoot me a link to it on Facebook, because I'll pick it up.
Check it out. Yep. And one other thing about being surreal, I'm sitting at my table, and if I look over my left shoulder the whole time at the convention, I have Mick Foley over here. Now, I'm a wrestling fan. I have Mick Foley over here, and I keep looking at him. And he looks at me a couple times. I keep looking at him, and I'm like, this is the dude that got thrown off the top of Hell in the Cell. I mean, this guy. By the Undertaker, of all people.
So, yeah, man. Every time I see him, you know, it's just like, that's the dude. That's mankind, man. I mean, it's like, you know, all his different personalities.
Cactus Jack.
yeah, man. I mean, it's really cool to see. I want to say, I can't remember. Was it the year before last? I can't remember who was there. There was another wrestler that was there.
I usually have a one or two there.
Was it Shawn Michaels that was there?
I don't remember seeing Shawn. I think I saw Ricky Morton there one time. I don't think he had Robert with him. He may have been. Hell,
I can't remember. But I could swear I think it was Shawn Michaels that was there.
Yeah, he may have been.
But this was only a couple of years ago. I think the only year that I didn't make it out to the show was probably the heavy pandemic year.
Yeah.
Where they still had it, but it was, well, you know.
That's the year I did go, and there wasn't nearly as much traffic as there normally was expectedly. And even my buddy, we get an apartment, Airbnb across the street, the Landmark, instead of staying at the hotel, because A, it's cheaper, B, it's nicer, C, it's quieter. And anyway, he couldn't go. So I ended up staying in that place by myself. And you talk about fucking creepy, man, staying in that big ass apartment by yourself in Atlanta in the middle of the night. But anyway, I digress.
That's like one of the funniest things, man. Like, you know, you see these comedy skits and everything like that where they talk about white people shit.
Yeah.
I am one of those people. I am one of the ones that gets into white people shit. If it's if it's creepy and scary, I'm checking it out. I'm gonna be the first to walk in there. You know, I'll be the first one to get killed.
Yeah, I'm gonna be the first one to meet that axe or that chainsaw.
Exactly, because if not anything else, I'm gonna be walking around and be like, "This is really cool."
Nice. Oh man, well, KB, man, I've enjoyed this conversation. I definitely want to have you back, and you know, if you'd be interested in co-hosting an episode with me when I have someone on, your knowledge of horror is awesome. If we could align that schedule, I'd definitely love to have you on. I like talking to you.
Same here.
You got a lot of knowledge, and I definitely want to have you on again to talk more horror. But for this episode, I'm going to let you go. I know you worked a long, hard day today, and I got to tend to my dog.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I get off here, I got to go take mine out too.
Yep. But anyway, I enjoyed it, man. If there's anything you want to, anything you want to personally plug, go right ahead. If you guys have episodes of Kill the Cast coming out, or if you're, let me ask you that before we leave. Where are you with that particular podcast? Are you guys still producing?
Yeah, I mean, at this current moment, we do have plans of getting more episodes out. Let me put it that way. But life has a way of just getting into it, because, one of the three of us lives, Jay, he lives, in the Pacific Northwest. And then you've got, my other co-host, Jerry, who lives in Tennessee. And then you got me. So we're all in three different time zones and just trying to line it up with work and everything that everybody's got going on in life and all the rest of that. It just became really difficult
to coordinate
the past year. Yeah. It's become really difficult because we got different work schedules and, and then obvious normal hectic things of life. So we're just on a hiatus that we don't exactly know when the end is going to come, but we do have plans.
Okay.
One of the things that I can tell you real quick before we get out of here is that we had tried recently to do an episode, and we've tried to do this three times, and where we try to do the Evil Dead series.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to do two episodes where we were going to have, Evil Dead 1 and 2, and then we were going to have Army of Darkness, and we were going to have the remake of Evil Dead. And then obviously Evil Dead Rise come out, so we were going to talk about that too. And we were going to kind of leave the show on the back burner, maybe bring it up. Yeah. We were going to bring it up and kind of leave it on the back burner because we were just going to focus on the movies. And every single time we have tried to record something on Evil Dead, something has happened. We've then got to the point where we call it the Evil Dead curse. Because every time something has happened. This past time that we did it, Jerry's internet went out and my power went out. No, it was the other way around. His power went out. My internet just stopped. And it didn't come back on for hours. And then there was the time we tried to do it before that, something happened. And the time we tried to do it before that, something happened. And we've never really had that major of an issue with any of the other shows that we've done. And we're close to 100. And, that's the only one where it has been a continuous every single time. And that was one that we were going to do recently. And we call it the Evil Dead curse, because every time we try to do it, something happens.
Something happens. Well, I'm a big Evil Dead fan too, and we could do another 2 hours on that. So I'm going to stop myself from talking about it.
But other than that, man, I mean, just keep your ears out. Eventually it will come, but
Well, I'm going to put a link below for Kill the Cast podcast. They do have a back catalog of episodes. I've listened to a few of them. They're very entertaining. All three guys are very knowledgeable about horror. They bounce things off of one another. They get into little fun arguments, but nothing too serious. But it's a good show. I enjoyed listening to what I've heard so far.
And we've got other people that are on there too, that it kind of goes underneath our banner, like, Underwater Kaiju from Outer Space. We've got Friday Nightmares, I think.
Yep.
Those are some really good ones to listen to. Those are some really good ones. So anybody out there that wants to check them out, go for it. I mean, anything you want, just look through the description.
All right, cool.
The horror coliseums are probably the best ones. The horror coliseums, those are probably the best ones.
All right. Well, I'll put links in the notes below so you guys can just click on them and check them out. And I am Charles Campbell, your small town horror author. KB already kind of promoted my book just a couple minutes ago, but I'll hold up another copy of it. It's The Piano Witch, came out last Halloween. You can go to valleyboypublications.com and pick up your signed copy. I also have another book coming out late summer called Signature, A Cut Above. It's about this crazy beautician. You might want to check it out if you're into hairstyles.
Nice.
But yeah. Anyway, that's it for this week's episode of Horror 421, the podcast. We'll catch you next time. And thanks again, KB.
Thank you.
Peace.
We hope you had a horrific time, lovelies. Thank you for tuning in to Horror 421, the podcast. Be sure to like us on YouTube and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.